Coming up on All About Android, it's me, Ron Richards, and Florence Ion. And we invite Dave Burke, who is the VP of Engineering for the Android team at Google, onto the show to talk all about Android 11. We talk about what this release has been like in this work-from-home environment. We even learn what the internal dessert name for Android 11 is, now that they don't use dessert names out in public. A whole lot of details in there to discuss. Also, I do a little first look, a hands-on with the OnePlus Nord device that just announced today. Samsung is about to announce a crazy amount of devices at its Unpacked event in a couple of weeks. We have a bunch of your email and more next on All About Android. All About Android is brought to you from LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? Well, LastPass can ensure that they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remote. Visit LastPass.com/twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan, and get the plan shipped to your door for free at mintmobile.com/android. And by LastPass, give your IT department a break and supply them with the tools that really protect your business. Visit lastpass.com/twit to find out how they can help you. Hello and welcome to All About Android, episode 482, recorded on Tuesday, July 21st, 2020. We're your weekly source for latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
And I'm Ron Richards.
And I'm Florence Ion. Hello.
Hello. Hello, three of you. Joined with a fourth, actually. We have a fourth person in the Brady Box Squares joining us today. Return guest to the show. We've now had you on enough times that we can say you're definitely friend of the show. Dave Burke, who is the VP of Engineering for Google, for Android at Google. How you doing, Dave?
Good. Thank you for welcoming me back. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. We're always excited to get you on, man. We feel like we've kind of like struck gold when we can have anyone that works on the Android team on the show, especially this close to the launch of the next big version of Android. Of course, Android 11. We're deep in the waters of the beta right now. I've been running it on my Pixel 4 XL. Flo, Ron,
I've been running it on the Pixel 3.
I have not installed it on mine, but I'm living vicariously through Flo and Flo and Jason. Dave, what is the most exciting point in a new OS rollout? Is it when the beta rolls out for the first time, you get those first early reviews, or when it's finally rolled out as the final release?
Great question. So the final release rollout is always like anticlimax, because at that point everything's working, and so we're not too worried about it. I think the beta, not the first developer preview, but the first beta is the one that I'm most nervous about, because that's when all of the things that we've been working on sort of come together and the narrative comes together. And so I'm always a little nervous at that point to make sure we've actually landed something that makes sense. So we're past that point, which is good. But we still have a little bit more work to finish.
Right, for sure. I mean, when you're doing a public beta, you're doing that first beta, it's really kind of a symbol from Google to say, hey, we feel confident enough in this that it's not going to totally wreck your phone, you know, through some weird random, you know, occurrence that happens. It's going to be pretty safe. It's going to be relatively stable. Nothing's perfect, of course, but it would be kind of difficult to release that and then realize, oh, wait a minute, we actually did miss that thing, and it's turning your device to mush. So let's reverse that. So I imagine there's a lot of nervousness around that.
Yeah, exactly. And we do. I mean, we test and we call it dogfooding. A lot of Googlers will use the builds early on, but it's never the same as going out more broadly. You know, there's going to be Wi-Fi access points we haven't seen, or Bluetooth devices we haven't seen, or certain apps that folks haven't installed. And so getting that broader reach is super important for us. And getting the feedback from the community is critical to make it all work together.
Yeah, for sure. And you've had a little bit of uncertainty. Obviously, everybody has had some uncertainty with this whole work from home. Yeah, a little bit might be the wrong choice of words there. But that's kind of played had an effect on the schedule a little bit as well. How has that Like, how has that been? You kind of had an idea for the kind of roadmap through the developer previews and into beta, and then you kind of had to extend it a little bit. Why the extension, and how was it navigating through that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think the biggest challenge isn't the length of time working from home, but more so the transition from working in the office to working from home. And so, you know, I think as we all know, it was quite our world turned upside down, and our routines messed up, and you know, people getting set up at home to work from home was a huge part. We had a lot of work to do on our tooling so that you could use, for example, high-powered desktops that are on your desk in the office, but with devices that you're debugging at home, and like making sure the plumbing for all of that works, remote ADB and things like that. And so there was a settling in point where we lost some productivity really over a few weeks to get back up. We were actually tracking our internal CLs, so change lists, like the flow of changes that were going through the team. We probably dropped about 7 to 8%, I would say, in the work from home shift, and so that, you know, that kind of added up, and so we decided to push the schedule back by a couple of weeks, basically.
Yeah,
I'm actually really proud that we were able to keep it going. Like I think actually, I mean, amazing to see everybody adapt to this world and working from home. But it was nice, you know, to especially see my team make that adaptation and keep things moving along.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah. Speaking of moving things along, I feel like this is a good time for us to kind of just segue into Android 11 and just sort of think about the things that feel really normal to us in a time of so much uncertainty. One of those things is wondering if desserts were still around, Dave, and you know, you still had an internal name for Android 11 based on a dessert. Where would we be right now, it being, I believe, R? I mean, we have some ideas of our own, Rocky Road, Red Velvet, but we're wondering if there's anything official going around that you guys were using, just kind of refer to the latest beta.
I was gonna make some really bad joke about trying to tie it to a certain virus that we're all familiar with, but that would be bad.
Oh.
SARS? No. So first of all, we have moved to numbers officially, and so I need to keep my marketing folks happy, and we are turning it up to 11, as you know, so it's Android 11. However, if you were to ask an engineer on my team what are they working on, they would say RVC, and so RVC is Red Velvet Cake.
Yes.
There it is.
The thing is, though, I don't know, and I was asking one of our engineering managers today, I was like, is RVC going to appear anywhere? Like when we drop open source code? And he's like, no, I think it's going to say R. So now I'm kind of disappointed because our vernacular is RVC. And so we got to, and I'm not allowed by marketing team to like make a statue with Red Velvet Cake. So I need some kind of way to go rogue. So if you have any ideas, let me know. We'll get it in there somewhere.
It always works to have a hidden tap sequence in there that will reveal some sort of RVC related kind of explosion. So sneak that in there if you can.
We're speaking the language of Dan Sandler, calling Dan Sandler. So we'll figure something out.
Yeah. So as we are turning it up to 11 and looking at Android 11, you know, historically we've seen in previous versions that there's always been like the standout feature or the aspect of the new operating system that really kind of captures, you know, kind of our minds and imagination about what this next, you know, version paradigm is. You know, from your perspective, what is that feature for Android 11? You know, when I do install it and I'm switch over to Android 11 on my daily driver, you know, what is the feature that's going to, you know, blow my mind and change my world?
So I think, you know, it's interesting. I think at where we are on the innovation curve for smartphones, the initiatives that we have going on nowadays don't really fit in 1 year anymore. Because they generally tend to be multi-year efforts. Just the nature of the complexity at this point. So you think about like mainline modules, and we can talk about that later, but like that's something that's a multi-year effort. For this year in Android 11, I think more about themes, like starting themes than features. So the two starting themes I think about that are in Android 11 for the first time are this sort of focus on people and conversations as one, and then also the control space. And you know, if you think of back to like Android 1.0, where we had the, you know, the notification shade was there from the beginning. Back then, most of your notifications, like the high percentage of them, were from people. So it was either like an SMS message or a missed call or a chat app. And over time, the notification shade has become more generalized. It's used for lots of different things, like telling you that you're paired to your Garmin device or something like that. And so one of the goals of this new theme is to really, can we refocus the operating system and put people first? You know, if you're going to be interrupted, you're probably going to care to be interrupted by people more than other aspects of the system. And so that's one thing that we're doing. You know, we have this separate conversation section in the notifications. We have made Bubbles work really well, I would say, and have been dogfooding a bunch of apps with it. We've sort of changed the prioritization so that you can prioritize people and they'll punch through different places on the system. And so this is all, it's a theme, right? Like, this is a start. There's going to be a lot more that we're going to do in this place, in this area. So that's one. And then the other, of course, is this control space. And it's recognizing that increasingly more and more of us have this, are living in a kind of ambient computing environment where we have like a smart screen, or we have a watch, or we have a TV that happens to run, Android maybe, or a car. And so we're really trying to make it very easy to connect your phone to, or a tablet to, the, all the devices around you. And again, this is a starting theme. We have this, you know, place on the power button that you get this nice menu and you can quickly control things, but there's a lot more that we're going to do. So yeah, starting themes more than features is how I think about it.
Well, and cool. That feature that you just mentioned happens to actually be, like, if I was to point to one feature that I've used and enjoyed and that actually kind of has a look and a feel to it, which is kind of akin to some of these big key features that we have seen in, you know, years ago when there was a lot of innovation, like mounting innovation to reflect in a new version of Android, it is that power menu, the power menu that comes up and being able to configure all the smart home devices in my house, the lights, and have direct controls over those without having to jump into an app. That's something that, like, if someone was to ask me, like, what is one big thing that I'm going to notice about Android 11 right out of the box? And, you know, I would point to that just because it's a meaningful change to how I live my life, especially right now, like surrounded by all of the, by these four walls in this right. house. I actually use that on a very regular basis. I love the integration there.
And I think there's actually a commonality between the people conversations and the control space. But both of them are, well, the capability is already there on your phone in the apps, but they're in apps and they may be in multiple apps. And so what we're doing is reducing the friction and really bringing out some of the features and content of apps out and bring them into a central space, whether that's a notification shade or in the power menu. And this is a good thing for users because it allows you to quickly control things and see the people you care about. And it's a good thing for apps because it gets more engagement. And so that's a sort of another sub theme that's going on here to point out.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. So I feel like we're kind of like right on the cusp of a couple of things that we definitely want to talk about. One is notifications. The other is messaging. I'll start with messaging. Android 11, you know, another big key feature here is kind of the messaging approach. Really does a great job, I would say, in my use of it, of managing this like cross-platform world that we live in, or cross-service world that we live in when it comes to messaging. I have so many messaging apps installed on my device. And the ongoing challenge has always been, I've got these people over here, these people over there. How do I like manage inside my head which app serves up which friend on which coast, you know, that sort of thing. And some of the changes that you've made in Android 11 with conversations and then Bubbles, these things really seem to be great for kind of in a dynamic sort of way, managing and clustering these messages so that the per service approach doesn't matter as much. They're all going to the same place. The question that comes to mind on this is, this really has a lot to do with incoming messages, which is great. And I've noticed the benefits of it immediately. What about outgoing? Because I still have to kind of do the mental gymnastics around like, yeah, but if I want to message that person, I've got to go over there. Has there been any thought about like how this approach might be applied to the opposite direction going forward? Or is that just infinitely more difficult to do?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question. I think, by the way, on the inbound, just a slight nuance, there's something in between, which is you get an inbound and now you want to reply. And so we've done a lot of work on the sort of smart reply. And one of the features in Android 11 is a little subtle, but we've now got smart reply available everywhere. And there was a lot of technical gymnastics to make that work in a secure on-device way so the keyboard could actually make suggestions for smart replies in any application. But your question is really about, you know, initiating outbound. I think it's really interesting. I think it's hard to unify all of these apps on the outbound because they tend to be kind of quite different. Like, if I've taken a really great photo and I love the artistic quality of my photo, I'm probably going to pick Instagram, right? Or if I want to start a chat with my friend, I'll probably go to WhatsApp. Or if I want to start a group chat, I'll go to Slack or Discord or something like that. So the apps themselves are not, while they're all some kind of messaging, social type of app, they have sort of different purposes for you. And so it's kind of hard to have one sort of unified messaging paradigm for them. One thing this does remind me, though, of is something we talk about a lot in terms of research, which is sometimes you have an idea or a thought or a piece of content that you want to create, and it's in your head, but we're conditioned by smartphones, which I think is your point, is like, first I got to pick an app, then I think about the content. Right. And I think if you invert that and you're like, okay, well, here's my thought. I'm just going to start writing. I'm going to start typing. Or here's a picture I've just taken. Or here's a sound I've recorded or whatever. And it would be nice if there was a way to start, you know, creating and then pivot to the app. And that's something that we think about a lot. And my UX team are probably really annoyed that I'm tipping that off because we don't have a full answer. But it's something I think that there's something there. And it's something that we think about.
It would be cool. It would be cool if there was like a universal compose as you're creating it, it then picks up what the destination would be based off what you're doing and injects it into that app. That would be very cool. And I will after the show, I will send you my email and I'll send you an invoice for that idea.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, if you're not busy, we have a couple of open. I'm fixing the blind over there. We have a couple of open slots on our research research team that we could. I think it's good. I think it's a great idea. And the question is like, how do you do that? How do you build that experience really well and make it work really well? And so it's definitely a good direction.
That'd be very cool. So before we move on from messaging and Jason touched on a little bit in terms of notification, we talk a lot about apps on the show, and over the past couple of months, I feel like we've talked about and reviewed a bunch of different third party apps by you know independent developers that have focused on notifications and specifically like the log of notifications and giving you access to notifications after they've been dismissed and keeping that record and all that sort of thing. And then now as we're looking under the hood of Android 11, we're seeing similar functionality being brought at the OS level. So my thought is, what is your thought around the evolution of notifications and the notification strategy? And how much attention are you guys paying to what's being done by third-party developers and saying, okay, yeah, someone's onto that idea. Let's pick it up and put our own spin on it and insert it. We're all building off each other at some point. But I'm really curious to see how much you guys are designing within a bubble and just having the same idea versus seeing what's going on by users in the marketplace.
Glad you said bubble. Bubble experience in the operating system was inspired by Facebook Messenger, right? The way that was built previously was with this sort of transparent window on top, which we didn't love as an implementation, had performance security issues. And so now we've sort of made it first class part of the system. And the Google Messages app, for example, now supports it. And there's a bunch of other app teams that are integrating to it. And so that's an example of where we were inspired by innovation. Android, being very flexible, allowed app developers to innovate and try things. And then it sort of graduated into something in the operating system. So that pattern definitely happens. On notifications, I don't know. I mean, just being super kind of like, it's not a case of where I've been involved in conversations where we're looking at external stuff. I think we generally have a pretty good fountain of ideas for notifications. Something that's been part of our DNA since the beginning. So we have a lot of ideas that we can't get to with each release. And so generally there's a backlog of stuff we want to do anyway. I think that one, the sort of notification stuff tends to be a little bit more, we obviously do lots of internal research and cafe studies and but I don't think it's hugely inspired by third parties, if just to be candid.
That's totally fair, and I always say that validation of the same idea from different sources, same people having the same idea, is just validation of the concept, right? So so that applies.
Speaking of third parties sort of taking the reins, one thing that a lot of third parties were doing was facilitating screen recording on Android. And I know that might not seem like a big deal, but for those of us in the beta, this is a very exciting little part of the OS that's coming forth. I know a lot of people are really excited about this. Now, I know that it does have the option to record in-app audio. And so I know it's kind of a tricky feature for apps to enable without any sort of like DRM pressure and that sort of thing. How is Google tackling this to sort of make sure that it's safe to use and that, you know, everybody's still getting the functionality out of it without, you know, any sort of major privacy concerns?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's one of these features that sort of runs up against, you know, user incentives, developer incentives, legal limits. And by the way, this reminds me of Flashlight. Do you remember, like, there were no flashlights into mobile operating systems and you had to go get an app? And now, I don't think I could live without the flashlight button and the quick settings. I mean, like, literally, it's probably my most used tool. Yeah. And so I think screen record is kind of similar. It's like, you know, you still have to depend on a third-party app, but it's so useful. It should be built in. And so that was our thinking behind that. On the specific DRM issue, yeah, I mean, the challenge is, you know, apps have content that they've licensed, that they have, you know, contracts that limit what can be done with that content. And so we just, as an operating system, have to honor that. And so on Android, an app can basically prevent its surface, its view from being recorded, or prevent its audio stream from being recorded. And ultimately, we just have to respect, we have to give the developer, the app developer, the control of that and respect that as a operating system. So we just gotta, that's them and the brakes. We gotta live within those constraints.
I feel like this is kind of related to the next little question that I have for you. Regarding permissions, right? We're talking about permission for an app to screen record. But permissions is sort of a larger scale on Android 11. They're working a little bit different, or rather, they've been tweaked now. So it is kind of completely up to the user what the app is doing. How long does it take before this sort of thing kind of takes effect across all the apps that are offered in the Play Store? You know, can we as users expect to have like perfectly finite control over this in the future? And maybe what are some other ideas that y'all are circulating regarding this really important part of the operating system?
Yeah, I think, you know, privacy is an ongoing, again, to use that word, theme. Like, it's an ongoing theme. We, in Android 10, we had, I think, some 50 changes and features related to privacy. And in Android 11, we've continued on a lot of them. I think one of the big obvious changes is we have one-time permissions now for not just location, which has been done before, but also microphone and camera. And so this is the idea that when you launch an app, you can allow the app just for that one time to use, say, the camera to take a picture of your credit card, but I don't want that app to have access to my camera again. So it's a really useful feature. I really like that feature, by the way, because it generally requires the developer to do nothing. It just, to the developer, it just looks like the user never gave the permission in the first place. So it's one of those things that just works immediately, which is really cool. I think the other thing that we've done, which I'm really proud of, is we call it permission auto reset. And so the idea is, after a certain amount of time, and we're still tweaking that value, after a certain amount of time of not using an app, like I'm talking like, you know, weeks, months, the system will actually reset all the permissions as though you had just reinstalled the app. And it's another one of these sort of privacy preserving mechanisms that we've been working on. And I think I like it because it's just another sort of layer of privacy, privacy insurance. I don't know, that's not the right word, but privacy assurance capability that we've built into the system. And so that's new in Android 11 as well.
I love that. Sorry. Go, Flo.
I just want to ask a really quick question. What is kind of like the timeline? Can you share what you're thinking about in regards to the permission reset? Because I really want to try that out myself, but obviously it hasn't not enough time has gone by for it to kind of ask me.
I think there's an ADB command you can trigger to force it. Yeah. It was funny you asked that question. So, because I asked one of my product managers recently that question, and they said, well, we're still experimenting, and that's part of the reason for the beta. So I think that's the official answer. I may or may not have heard 90 days, but I really don't know if that will stick. So we'll wait on the sort of user feedback and see how it goes. But it's sort of that order of time, right? It's like, it's clear, you know, amount of time that's passed, it's clear you're not using this app anymore.
Right.
And so what is that value? So we'll figure it out. Answers on a postcard to, never mind.
One topic that I definitely wanted to touch on here, hopefully my internet is staying stable. It's been a little weird this afternoon, is background kills. Because this has actually been a topic that's been suddenly a very heated topic the last couple of weeks. I feel like there's been a lot written about it, a lot of people chipping in on this. In fact, the AMA that the Android team held, I think it was just last week, addressed the idea of background kills and what's happening in the background, specifically for how the fact that different OEMs kind of do this differently and developers don't know the best way to create their apps or kind of what the rules are in the sandbox that they're playing in as it relates to that. So I guess what I'm wondering is why or what the reasoning is behind Google possibly going a little bit further than what's being implemented right now. What really stands in the way of Google just placing like a stringent limitation on what OEMs can actually do in that regard, maybe tying it to GMS agreements, something along those lines. I'm curious to know your thoughts on that.
Yeah. This isn't new. It's something that we talk about a lot and put a lot of effort in. I think there's a website. I don't know why I'm advertising this, but don'tkillmyapp.com where developers
right.
document
the worst offending from a developer perspective. The interesting thing is, if you stack rank the worst devices from a developer perspective, they may or may not correlate to some of the best battery life for the user. And there lies the rub, right? The device makers are doing this to increase battery life, which is usually a top concern in pretty much every user survey I see. So they're doing it for a good reason. And, you know, they're doing it also for the occasional case where an app misbehaves, maybe there's a bug or something. Now, the challenge is it creates unpredictable behavior, and that's also bad for the user. And so what's the right balance? And so we've been putting a lot of effort into this, but it's just tricky to get that balance right. And so, for example, and you're right to bring up sort of agreements. So I think we've been changing the CDD, that's our compatibility definition document, which basically describes what the rules a device must adhere to be compatible with the ecosystem of apps. And one of the changes that we've made with Android 11 is that if a device maker does kill an app in the background, it has to alert the user that it's doing that. And that's really important because it educates the user that they know what's happening and also gives them an opportunity to prevent that, to disable that feature. So that's one thing. It's like, we want transparency. Like, if you're going to do this, please make it clear to the user so they know what's going on, right? The other thing is we are dispensing with allow lists. So this was an issue where some device makers would have sort of aggressive background application stopping, but they would have an allow list of apps that would be exempt from that. And we don't love that idea because it makes it very hard for a new app developer, maybe they're super innovative, but they require some background activity, but it makes it really hard for them to break in because they can't get on the allow list because they don't have enough users, but they can't get enough users because they can't run in the background, right? So we don't like that. So we made a change there. And then, you know, we've been working through different device makers on different CDD violations. The good news is that all the major device makers we talk to, when we sort of flag the issues and bring it up, they're really receptive. And so there's a bunch of big manufacturers with big flagships that have updates coming down the pike in the next sort of weeks, months, that make this a lot better. I'm not going to say it's perfect, but we're seeing a lot of progress. So like, there's definitely room for optimism here. So I feel like we're making progress. It probably feels slow to the outside world, but I'm seeing progress. And then internally on the platform, you know, from a developer perspective, we're making some changes. So Android 11 has this new method on Activity Manager called Get Historical Process Exit Reason. And they, what that means is when your app starts up, you can query and go, what was the reason for me exiting the last time? Did the user close me? Did I time out? Or did something mysterious happen? And so that also helps bring transparency to the developer, right? So the CDD will bring transparency to the user. This will bring transparency to the developer. So we'll have a clearer idea what's going on. And then finally, and this is really the bigger point, the work is also on us, as on the Android team, to make the operating system more resilient so that device makers don't have recourse to these sort of behaviors that are fragmented and different on different devices. And to that end, we actually have been doing a lot of work over the years to improve background activity and limit it and make sure that, and this is not, it's easy for an app developer to have a bug. And so we want the OS to be resilient to that. And then for the system to report that bug so the developer can fix it. So anyway, we're working on making the system more resilient so that we don't have to recourse to that. So yeah, there's no quick answer to this because it's complicated, but we are making progress.
And awesome. It's got to be an interesting dance between the developer community and the OEM partners and the operating system. It's like a three-way tango kind of, and you guys, in lieu of I/O in this, crazy 2020 that we're living in, you guys did the AMA with the developer community. What other kind of things are you doing for developers during this time to make sure they're being heard so that they're able to, react to what's coming in Android 11, be able to benefit or make changes as they need to? How are you guys maintaining that communication?
Yeah, it's a great question. Three-way tango is that probably my job description, actually. And so, we have this really vibrant ecosystem of device makers and app developers, and it's actually a wonderful position to be in. For developers, we've been doing, you've probably seen the 11 weeks of Android. And so we wanted to have this sort of regular beat of information in lieu of I/O and produce some really great videos and educational videos. And then we've been just trying to be, find other forums. And I think you mentioned the AMA. So we did the AMA last week. And then we continue to do our consumer advisory boards where we bring in a lot of developers and we get their feedback. And that's actually a really important part of what we do in terms of prioritizing different developer tools and developer needs. And, one of the exercises we do there is stack rank, from most wanted to least wanted. And that helps guide what we do. So we still have those forums open. And then, on the device maker side, usually our format is every 6 months, we go out as a team to somewhere in Asia, meet with all the device makers and do that. This time it's we can't do that right now with travel restrictions. And so we're kind of doing, one-on-one meetings with different device makers to try to get their feedback. So it's definitely lower bandwidth than normal years, but it's not stopped. We're still doing our best to be innovative and find different channels.
So, yeah, and I got to imagine the challenge. But one of the questions that we had when this all first started, when I/O got canceled and things like that, I think the AMA was really interesting. That sounded, the 11 weeks of Android is really great. Did you guys explore some sort of live stream event, virtual event that could have been done for developers in lieu of I/O? Or was that just immediately, totally understanding if that's more of a marketing thing, or I know, and trust me, I work in live events on the virtual side, so I know how logistical the logistics can be. But I'm curious if it even came up in your guys exploring what you could do.
Yeah, candidly, it did come up. We had an event, we had content. And then, the protests broke out in the U.S. and really globally, and we just felt like it was the wrong time to do it. And so we decided as a team that, we were going to, allow the world to focus on more important things, quite frankly. And so we downplayed it and just did a blog post in 11 weeks on Android. And, and I think I think it was the right call to do. I feel like it was the right decision when I look back on it. It's a little... sad from a team dynamic, you want to get all this content forward and do that. But, sometimes there's bigger, more important things happening in the world than us. And so that's basically what happened.
Yes, it's what else can this year throw at us? But so in terms of developer kind of relations and reactions, one topic was scope storage. We kind of got a glimpse of it in Android 10, and then it was removed, which seemed like that was a response to developers who weren't ready to make such a drastic change. But now it's definitely happening in Android 11. What has the developer response been to this change? And did you guys change your approach between 10 and 11 to address developer concerns? runs, and how is this going to affect the users ultimately?
Yeah, this is a really important topic. We talk about this a lot. So, you know, for folks who don't know, scope storage is really, so today an app can write to the flash and store permanent information in an internal storage private space. That kind of makes sense. Only the app can see it. But many apps, or quite a few apps, also ask for external storage. And so you might be a music player app, and you want to store your music on an external SD card, and you want to be able to see media from other apps so that you can play it. And the challenge with external storage is that if a lot of apps are using it, then you get pollution. They can all see each other, and so you don't get sort of the isolation. So it's not good from a privacy perspective long term. Also, if an app is uninstalled, the files are left on the SD card or the emulated SD card, and so you sort of get like old files left around. And so scope storage is really about cleaning all of this up so that each app has its own storage area, both internal and external, and can actually say what content it makes available to other apps. And the challenge was we built it in Android 10, and quite a few apps actually adopted it. It went okay, but then there were some that just got stuck, and their use cases, which were very valid, were really hard to make work with the APIs we had at the time. So we decided to not make it required for Android 10 and give the developers and ourselves, frankly, a little bit more time to get it right. And then in Android 11, what we did is we added some new APIs that allow raw file access. So literally, if you're familiar with C and you fopen a file, that will actually work and we'll redirect it towards our media provider. And so those files are still get scoped to you, but to the app, it doesn't have to make any changes. It just seems to work. So there's some cool voodoo in there. That's allowed many apps to just migrate seamlessly. And then we've added a couple of other extensions for file browsers, which is kind of a special case as well for external storage. And so the feedback now is very positive. And I think the developer communities had, you know, an extra year as well to sort of get used to this. In the meantime, we produced also a lot of documentation. I think we have a nice case study on Viper, the app. This time for real, it's landing, it's happening. And so when you target your app to Android 11 SDK, then this scope storage is required.
Wow. Big change.
And this is a good example of the kind of thing that just, because the ecosystem is so large and these changes are so complicated, it just takes some time to get it right, and also to move the developer ecosystem with us, right? Like, we got to all move together. We can't just go off and do something radical and break things. It's no good to anybody. And so it's very much a community endeavor, you know, working with the developers, getting their feedback, iterating, and moving forward. So I think this is a good example of, I think, where, you know, I think we heard the feedback loud and clear, realized we weren't ready and delayed it and came back and came up with a better version, and now we're ready.
Cool. But see, this is why it's really fun to be an Android user, because even if you're not a developer like myself, you still get to like try out all of this new little stuff. But one thing that sort of kind of gets me down, I know, Dave, we always ask you about this, but it is one of kind of the persistent questions that exists, which is, when are we going to start to see these features come to other versions? And I know that, or rather other OEM versions of Android. I know that's what makes Android Android. You get to have your choice. You get to experience different flavors as you go across the board. And we have seen some improvement with Mainline and with Trouble for sure. And I'm wondering, are there any other components of the Android OS that you kind of hope Mainline will help out? And do you get to talk to like third-party OEMs before you take any of those into consideration?
Yeah, this is a great question. So this is also a topic I talk about a lot internally. I think Android actually has some strengths that I think we overlook sometimes. Like, all of the apps, including the Google ones, are unbundled and they update frequently. And that's mm-hmm. great, because when you want to make a change or you want a whole new feature, you don't need a whole new operating system update. We also have capability like the Google Play services that allows us to push new features like the emergency location service. So when you call 911, you get accurate locations of the responders and literally saves minutes, which saves lives. Things like Google Play Protect, where we have malware detection. And so the ability to be able to like make that available and updatable in all of the whole fleet is a very powerful capability. We recently used it for exposure notification capability for COVID-19 to help you know if you've been in proximity with somebody who tested positive and then no quarantine. We wouldn't have been able to do that if we didn't have those updatable mechanisms. Mainline sort of goes one step further, and it really sort of embraces that idea of like modules of code that are updatable, but allows us to do much more gnarly things inside the operating system. We now have 21 modules across the system that are updatable. Right. With Android 11, there's 9 new ones with Android 11. This is definitely one of those multi-year things where we're going to do more and more. I can't talk to what's happening next year, but I'm pretty excited about where we're going with mainline. Our focus is really on things that affect security and privacy and developer consistency. And so they're the things that we want to be able to update. And also by updating it, you get uniformity so that, these components are the same. So developers don't have to deal with changes. The balance, of course, with this is that we still want to allow flexibility and different device makers to be able to innovate and express themselves. And so there's a balance here. But this is a big investment for us. And like I said, next year there's going to be some nice big things to talk about. And then, updatability in general, like I think we did a blog post recently. We talked about, the adoption curve of Android 10 is much higher than 9, and which was higher than 8, and which was higher than 7. And so we're making progress. I think we're also doing a lot of lower level changes. Like one I'm pretty proud of in Android 11 is virtual AV. So if you have a Pixel, for example, the way AV updates work is you're using your phone, and then at night, we download a security update, which is a whole system update, and we call that your de-partition, for example. And then the next few days, when you happen to restart your phone, we'll reboot you into the B partition. And then the next thing will happen, in a month's time, when a security update happens, we'll update the A. Next time you reboot, we'll flip you to the A. So you get basically seamless updates. The challenge is it requires two partitions. So you have to sort of pre-allocate like a separate, A and B partition. Virtual AV allows one partition and allows us to dynamically size. So just grab a blob, basically a partition that's mounted on the data partition, and then allows us to download the update and then just flip into it. So you don't have to permanently offset the content that the partition. So anyway, that's one of the things that we're doing, which will help get AV updates into more devices. Because some of the device makers were concerned about having separate partitions. And so now that's opened the door. So you'll see that sort of seamless update that you have in Pixel and more devices, hopefully over the next couple of months and quarters. And then one other thing that I'm super excited about that we mentioned in the blog post is we call it GKI. It stands for generic kernel image. Android is based on the Linux kernel at the core. But what actually happens is each device maker takes the Linux kernel and makes some changes. And so each kernel is slightly different and there's different versions. The idea of generic kernel image is that we will have one kernel across all Android devices. And so we get more uniformity. And so that's another one of these long multi-year projects that we're working on, but I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, I am too. I feel like that's been some of the most meaningful kind of under the hood updates that have happened to Android in the last 3 years is Treble and Mainline. And yeah. When I heard about both of those at the announcement, that was what got me most excited. I was like, oh man, okay, this really needs to happen. So I love that we're starting to kind of see some improvements there. It will never be iOS numbers, just by nature, the way Android is at its core, comparatively speaking, but it's getting better. And there's nothing but good to be said about that. One final question, because I know you have to go. Final release feature. Now, I know in the past and possibly prior to this whole public beta approach that you are doing now, there would always seem to be like some special features kind of reserved for the final release. And it just kind of occurs to me that when you're doing a public beta, that becomes a lot more difficult to pull off because, well, it's a public beta and you're testing these with everyone. So everybody already kind of sees the majority of these features. Does that come into play? Like, I know we saw for a little while, we saw the clock customization feature was in there and then it suddenly disappeared. And so I'm like, well, maybe that's going to be like a big feature that suddenly rolls out that we know very little about yet. I don't know. I'm curious to know how that plays into your planning now that you've got this public beta process going.
I think the clock thing was, oops, that was not meant to go out. It's an experiment. So it happens occasionally. Because, as I mentioned earlier, like parts of Android are updatable, it allows us to also offer things that don't have to be baked into the beta. And so we are also working on a few things I'm quite excited about that will be appearing in the next, we'll call it the end of the summer, but the next sort of couple of weeks, maybe 4 to 6 weeks. One thing that is, I think you can see some chatter about, we are running a beta right now for nearby file sharing. And so that's the ability to share files peer-to-peer with devices. Now will be available to all devices through Google Play services. And that's another example of how we can build this feature and then make it available to everybody. And that's really important for a network-based feature like this, right? So it requires network effects so that I need to be able to know I can share my files with someone else. So that's another thing that's coming soon once we get through the beta. And then there's a few more things I can't talk about. One in particular I'm super excited about. We'll have to talk about it in the future. That's my plug to
something to look forward to next year, 2021.
Sure. I mean, a couple of months, it sounds like.
Before 21. This is the next couple of weeks.
All right, then. Better. Stay tuned.
Awesome.
Cool. Well, Dave, we can't thank you enough for your time. We really appreciate it. And actually, I wanted to share with you a message from one of our audience. We've got a live chat during the live stream of the interview. And Uncle Bick in our chat room said we wanted to thank you and the Android team for all the hard work. We might not always agree with every change, but we do appreciate we have Android to love and not have to put up with iOS. So on behalf of the entire All About Android community, we appreciate you and the team. So thank you for all the hard work.
Thank you. We appreciate all of the community too. It's one of the things that one of the things I'm missing the most this year is Google I.O. and being able to just walk the floor and talk to developers sort of get back and sort of see the support. And you're right, people don't always agree, but generally see that where our motives are coming from. And I think it's one of the things that we do maybe better than other folks is nurturing the community. And it's sad that we can't do that in person this year, but I see there are vaccines coming and next year, hopefully we can be back on shoreline.
It speaks to how strong this community is that we can still do this even in the midst of everything feeling awful. So
totally.
Makes me happy.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, really appreciate your time. Appreciate you and the rest of the, just like Uncle Bick in chat said, you and the rest of the team spending so much time and effort on this operating system that we just love enough to have a show about, that we talk about it weekly. Mm-hmm. So thank you again for joining us. Dave Burke, of course, is the VP of Engineering for Android at Google. Dave, we hope to see you soon and best of luck. Can't wait to see the final release. We'll be looking forward to it.
Cool. Thanks for having me on. See ya.
Take care, Dave.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you
soon.
Thanks,
Dave.
Aw, I love interviews like that. That was fun.
That was great.
Miss Google I.O. Sorry.
I know.
I need
it
to say it.
It makes me really miss Google I.O. Totally.
It's really hard not having that, because it's been such a normal part of my life for the last 7 years. And I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. It's a piece of my year that is missing, absolutely. And collectively, because there's so much that goes around cultivating the operating system because of that event and the developer activity and all that stuff. So it's not just being there. It's kind of the influence of there. So it'll be interesting how that plays a role. Let's take a break and thank the sponsor of this episode. And then we'll get into some other big news coming up in a few minutes. But first, this episode of All About Android is brought to you by Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is the carrier that I use. I love Mint Mobile. If you're still using one of the big wireless providers this year, have you asked yourself what you're actually paying for between expensive retail stores, inflated prices, hidden fees, of course? You're being taken advantage of because they know that you're going to pay. And the model has proven that you're going to pay because you have for so long. Well, enter Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile provides the same premium network coverage you used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile saves on retail locations. They save on overhead. And then what they do is they pass those savings directly to you And I'm a testament to this. My wife is now on Mint Mobile. She switched over from Verizon. We're saving so much money by going with Mint Mobile. You pay a ridiculously less amount of money, especially compared to Verizon. And we're just saving money right now at a time when we really want to be saving money. It's a no-brainer. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan. Every plan comes with unlimited nationwide talk and text. With Mint Mobile, you can stop paying for unlimited data that you'll never use and choose between plans with 3, 8, or 12 gigs of 4G LTE data. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan. I have so many Android devices that I use all the time. I just pop the Mint Mobile SIM in, and it works 100% of the time. It's awesome. You can also keep your same phone number along with all of your existing contacts. I ported my number. So did my wife. So ditch your old wireless bill and start saving with Mint Mobile. To get your new wireless plan for just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan and get that plan shipped to your door for free, go to mintmobile.com/android. That's mintmobile.com/android. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month with our three-month introductory plan, mintmobile.com/android. All right. It's time for a pretty interesting hardware section. So after much pre-launch anticipation, today OnePlus held its event where it demonstrated its return to the mid-range, the OnePlus Nord, which is essentially OnePlus's budget-friendly mid-range device, kind of in many ways seems to take the company back to its roots for the OnePlus One. I went digging around the house. I have the OnePlus One somewhere. I really wanted to bring it today and just kind of check out the evolution, but I couldn't find it. But
ancient.
Yeah, back. What was the OnePlus One when it launched? Was it $400? Was it $400 at launch, it was, or $350 or something?
$299
But that's when you could get phones for that price. Like that was a very different pricing structure back then. So they've evolved with the times, so to speak.
It was still
the OnePlus One.
There were phones at $299, but the higher end devices were more like $500, $600. I mean, yeah, the scales were different. This
better
was still way less expensive.
Yeah, I remember when the OnePlus One came out and Gina got it. I thought she was crazy because it was just so out there as a concept, as an idea, but you couldn't beat the price and you couldn't, you know, and here we are six years later, back to an affordable phone.
Yeah. So, they're looking to release a powerful device, moderate price range. I do have the device. I actually have it right here. I've had it for about a week and a half.
Ooh, look at that color.
I just want everyone to know that, you know, unofficial OnePlus fan here. I'm not a fan club president like Flo was with Samsung. But Jason was sitting on this OnePlus Nord, and I don't know if I missed an email or missed a note, but I didn't know he had one. He's had one this entire time and kept it a complete secret from us.
I'm sorry. I did. It's honestly, that was not intentional. I think that's just a symptom of my crazy life.
I'm more concerned about OnePlus's NDAs keeping us from one another. They're trying to divide the triumvirate here. No, I know. I'm very excited to hear what you think of it.
I will agree. They do have an NDA in place. I can only talk about kind of like hands-on first impression stuff right now. I will have a full review coming next week. So that's kind of
talk to me about that back. I want to hear your first impressions ahead about that back.
Yeah. So, I mean, design-wise, it really looks like any other modern kind of OnePlus device. It, you know, it's got a glass back, as you can see. It's got a nice, I actually really like this color. In person, this color is really nice. It's not quite as iridescent as some of their other designs have been on some of their previous phones, but it does a really good job of repelling fingerprints and that sort of stuff. But it is a, you know, kind of a glass sandwich approach. You've got everything that you expect on a OnePlus device. You've got the notification switch on the side. side and, you know, power volume. The cameras on the back are actually the same camera array that you find on Plus 8, not the 8 Pro. And there is a difference between those two, but you get the same one that's on the 8 regular, whatever you want to call it. 48 megapixel main, 8 megapixel wide, a 2 megapixel macro, and then a 5 megapixel depth sensor. On the front, as you can see up at the top, and then Burke, yeah, I also have video that I recorded. On the front is actually a cutout in the display with dual front-facing cameras. One of them is an ultra-wide, and then one of them is a standard 32 megapixel. The ultra-wide is 8 megapixel. So you can get kind of, you know, they say you don't need a selfie stick with this camera, which I suppose is true. I've never used a selfie stick, so I wouldn't know. But comes with a sometimes I wonder.
It helps when you have. I mean, yeah. You have a family of four. You want to get you all in one photo. But anyway, go on. Sorry.
That's true, but why when you've got an ultra wide front facing camera? Anyways, 6.44-inch 1080p display. It does have 90 hertz refresh on it, so it's got the higher refresh rate. It's an AMOLED display. The device that I have is the 12 gig version. So it's got 12 gigs of RAM, 256 gigs of storage, but you can also get it with 8 gigs of RAM. So you can spend a little less, I think. That's probably what the baseline is the 8 gigs. It's running the Snapdragon 765G processor with 5G support, of course. And 765G is the same processor that's rumored to come with a Pixel 5. I just feel like we're seeing a lot of devices that, you know, I think it's also going to be in the Pixel 4a. So this is really kind of turning out to be the processor, the Snapdragon processor that the flagship mid-range, if that is such a category, seems to be utilizing. Let's see here. 4115, so 4115 milliamp hour battery.
Wow.
Android 10. Running Oxygen OS, they have promised 2 years of updates, 3 years of security updates. This color, by the way, is called Blue Marble, but you can also get Gray Onyx. So there's two different colors. There is no IP rating, though, so you're not going to get water protection, that sort of thing. But, I mean, overall, like, my initial impression is that it's a solid glass design. I like that it's a flat front and it's not the curved. I've really kind of grown to not care very much for the curve anymore, so I like.
It seems like everybody is going curved, and so I'm actually surprised that it's flat front. Yeah,
I think it's more universal. It's easier to use. I mean,
easier to use
that curve. I see a lot of very angry people on Reddit about the curve.
Yeah, so. There's a lot of pushback on the curve suddenly. Let's see here. What else? I mean, like I mentioned, it's got the alert slider. It's hard because I can't really get in there and be like, all right, so check this out. But that's coming next week. But I would definitely say that kind of from a design perspective, the Nord complements OnePlus's design aesthetic. It really kind of fits in with their family of devices, you know, particularly like the characteristic that you see on the back here. Now, here's where things get a little challenging.
Okay.
It's 400 euros. So not dollars, because we here in the US will not be able to get a OnePlus Nord. It's only going to be released in India, China, and Europe. A lot of places in Europe, parts of Europe anyways. Not in the US. So that's disappointing. But
that is really disappointing, because what you just told us, you gave us all these really great specs. Like, it's got RAM, it's got battery, it's got this processor, it's got these great camera sensors that are on the OnePlus 8, but you can't pay this much amount of money for it here. You can only pay this much amount of money overseas. Did we find out ultimately why it's not a US release? Is it just because the 8 is supposed to be that model for the US market?
I haven't heard why specifically. I have heard, I do know through, and I think Marques Brownlee even mentioned this, that OnePlus, because Marques had an interview with, is it Carl Pei from OnePlus? So you should definitely check that out. Where Pei mentioned that there were going to be more Nords coming. So Nord is a family of devices this particular device releasing where it's releasing, there will be other Nords that are expected to come to the US. So I wouldn't be surprised if somewhere, and hopefully soon-ish, we start to see kind of this experiment rolled into the US and maybe taking, maybe it ends up being like a T approach. You know how there's the 7 and then there's the 7T. Maybe this is like a tick in the TikTok release, and then the next one will be one that the US gets. I don't know. That's all guessing.
Yeah.
But
well, because this would definitely change the precedence of pricing. Like, I'm just, we were just talking earlier about the OnePlus One and like what it was priced back in the day. And I'm exhausted by how expensive things have become based on what I've seen elsewhere. I know. Yeah. Okay, Flo, welcome to adulthood. But I just mean in the sense of what we've seen launch, you know, overseas in China, for instance. The value add that's there and the amount of money that you don't have to pay to get kind of a quality performance device. And so it'd just be nice to return back to that here instead of, oh, you only have $200. Here's this phone kind of thing.
Right. Well, I think it means something to me anyways. I feel like there's something to be said for the fact that OnePlus seeded this device to a lot of U.S. journalists. So you saw a lot of U.S. coverage of this device. More U.S. coverage of a device that isn't releasing in the U.S. at all than I'm used to seeing. That tells me something about their longer-term vision for this particular brand to say, hey, putting it on your radar, this is going to be a pretty cool phone. We're not bringing it to you now, but probably somewhere down the line, and hopefully soonish, we will, because now's the right time. Now's the right time for a device.
I can't imagine. Yeah, I think you're spot on, Jason. I can't imagine they invest this amount of resource in terms of getting the word out about this if there isn't a longer range plan. So
Plus,
anyways, with a phone that color blue, why wouldn't you have a longer range plan?
I agree.
This blue goes on for days.
Yeah.
And the blue goes on. And the blue goes on.
So full review happening next week. Should be on Hands On Tech. twit.tv/HOT. Check that out next week. I should have a full review up for that phone then.
Next week.
There we go.
Next week. And what do we have coming in 2 weeks? We have a Samsung event.
Oh, that's right. Holy cow.
We do. We have something. I mean, look, we got to look forward to all little things that we can. Mark up the calendar. Samsung's Unpacked event, as we have reported previously on the show, is coming August 5th. And the chief of the mobile division at Samsung sent a blog post that there will be 5 new devices showcased at the event. So these are the devices that we know through various leaks and kind of bits and pieces of information floating around. We can look forward to the Galaxy Note 20, the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra, and then kind of the likely suspects, I suppose, are the Galaxy Z Fold 2, the Galaxy Z Flip 5G, the Galaxy Buds Live, and then a little less likely, and this one might make some of you sad because I think tablets are still a thing that people are looking for in this Android world, the Galaxy Tab 7, S7, and S7 Plus, kind of less likely for us to see at this event, as well as the Galaxy Watch 3. So create your bingo scorecard.
Yes.
Start a Google Meet, Zoom, hang out with your friends, and see who wins their bingo, and bingo gets, I don't know, donut delivery.
If you create a Samsung event bingo card, do not put the word Android on there because it'll never get marked.
That's the middle square Android.
That's the square that you're given.
Yeah, that's the square that you're given.
Okay, exactly. Okay, all right. Then that I can accept. Right.
Now I want to do this. Not that I have any time at all because I'm super busy, but like I could probably whip something up in Adobe Spark, I'm just thinking.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to it. If there's gonna be 5 devices, that's a jam-packed event. We're gonna be doing some live coverage of that. I think it's me and Leo. It's like 7 a.m. Pacific time, so I'm getting up early to do that.
I'll be up. Ron will be on normal time because.
Well, I've always said normal time is East Coast time, but.
So, But I guess there's a couple of other little like news bits to kind of look forward to. Wireless DeX mode. That's, again, a thing a lot of folks reach out to me about is DeX. And like, Flo, you got to use DeX. Flo, just like give in. DeX is the thing. And
It does seem pretty cool. I mean, I will say I criticized Samsung in the past that I'm not in on the Samsung ecosystem, nor do I want a Samsung phone. But DeX is pretty cool. I'm kind of jealous of it.
I mean, it's a good idea from Samsung. Excuse me.
She can't even bring herself to talk good about DeX. That's what happens there. She gets physically choked up when she's trying to compliment a feature that she doesn't like. It's amazing.
A good compliment to Chrome OS, I will say. It's a good, like, for Samsung, although Samsung has its Chromebooks too, but I don't know, just sort of thinking on the cuff. The other thing to sort of look forward to is I had mentioned the Buds Live. I wasn't sure what people were really referring to when they were talking about beans, because there's some other beans conversation happening on social media last week. But part of that beans conversation was centered around those Galaxy Bud Lives. Live Buds.
Oh,
Buds
look at
Live.
Those beans.
Bud Lives are. Sorry, what?
The Buds. No, I'm just looking at those beans buds, whatever they're called, Buds Live. I don't know. It kind of look comfortable.
They look like the Chicago thing in the park.
Yes, yes, yes.
But much smaller
Chicago
than that.
Thing.
Yes. In the park, in the thing, right? The big thing, yeah. Right? That everyone, okay, cool.
I'm all crickets on that one, but I've never.
Oh, it's the thing in Millennium Park. It's the big reflect. It looks like a bean, right? That everyone goes up and they take a picture of themselves and it all warped and yeah. So.
Okay. I think I've seen that. Yeah. Now I know.
Yeah. Anyway, new beans. Cool. They come in a new kind of pod. I'm a big fan of the Sam. I'm still using the first gen buds. They're great. So.
Yeah. My wife is too. She loves them.
I'm sure they'll be given away for free with the purchase of any note from your carrier.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, with the note especially, they usually do some pretty significant pre-order freebies. They pre-order now, you know, at the announcement, we'll give you whatever. So they'll probably throw
Do those only work with Samsung devices?
No.
And they are not in-ear, right? They are not they do not puncture, but they do not penetrate the canal in any way.
They penetrate a tiny bit. Yeah.
It doesn't look like it, right? It looks like they just kind of go in the hole.
It's a little knob that has to go in there and just kind of like, you know, connect, yeah, what you know, I want, stick to your earwax, basically.
I want that shot that, for those watching the video, I want to rotate it 90 degrees because I want to see like what the, how much, because, you know, I don't like things in my ears. And I'll be honest with you, I'm reaching end of life with my Gen 1 Pixel Buds between not staying charged. Like I need a new replacement, but I don't want to go in the ear and
understood. Yep. It's tough, that video doesn't seem to show the depth of whether it'll be piercing your skull or not, so
maybe you we'll swallow it. That's how you listen to music. That's why it's a bean.
Don't swallow your earbuds. Just
maybe you plant it and it grows into a giant speaker beanstalk and it takes you away from this place of uncertainty. And anyway, we should move on to the next thing because I can just keep going.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a pause in the show as we wrap up hardware, and we're going to thank our next sponsor. This episode of All About Android is brought to you by LastPass. And listen, if you work anywhere, your IT department, as you know, has a very big job, and they're responsible for lots of things that help make your business go. More devices, applications, and remote workforces, all with new threats and regulations, making strong security extremely complex. Luckily, LastPass provides your IT with strong security that is easy to use and manage. Secure every entry point from shadow IT to apps to mobile and cloud services. Their access solutions give you visibility and control over every access point to your organization. With LastPass, you can unify access and authentication. Employees access a variety of applications and devices, leading to a lack of visibility of user activity between each. LastPass Identity offers a simple and integrated view across all access and authentication tasks so they can see who is accessing what, when, and where. Increased security without impacting productivity. Increased security that slows down employees, hinders productivity. It's the worst, but you can't leave your business exposed. LastPass's authentication solutions enable you to understand user behavior, to adapt authentication based on the user, reducing friction and preventing threats, and ultimately keeping everybody working, which is the whole point. And of course, one of the most important things, making password security effortless. Passwords are entryways into businesses. Spreadsheets and sticky notes aren't secure. LastPass's password management secures them all so you don't have to. LastPass allows employees to do their work securely when in the office or working from home. They won't store your master password, which means hackers can't get to it. And encryption happens exclusively at the device level before syncing to LastPass for safe storage. So only users can decrypt their data. And we talk about that all the time on the show here about encryption, device level encryption versus in the cloud. We all know how important that is. Of course, LastPass gets it right. And even more so, LastPass uses 256-bit AES encryption. That is the same encryption type utilized by banks and the military, so you know you're getting the most security possible. And as you all know, we love LastPass. We all use LastPass here at Twit. Years ago, Jason got me on the LastPass bandwagon. I've never looked back. I've gotten my family on it. It is the only way to secure passwords. In fact, I was logging into a new software service the other day, and I used LastPass handy Chrome browser extension to generate a secure password and saved it into my vault and all that fun stuff. And I did pause for a moment. This is totally – I'm not just saying this for the ad. This is honestly – I sat back in my chair. I go, I wonder what I would be doing right now without LastPass. And so that's how thankful I was to have this application. So it's completely sincere. I use it every day. Could not imagine my digital experience right now without it. So listen, join the club, get on board, and secure your business and give your IT department the tools to keep your business safe. Visit LastPass.com/twit to find out how they can help your business stay productive and secure no matter where your employees are working from. That's LastPass.com/twit. And we thank LastPass for keeping us secure and sponsoring the show and being awesome. Thanks, LastPass.
Heck yeah, LastPass, you're awesome. Go ahead and just sit back and revel in the fact that you're awesome, LastPass. Pop that collar and just be like, I'm LastPass. I'm cool. Yeah, that's all you need to do.
That's all you need to do.
All right.
No, Jason, leave it up. Leave it up.
Oh, should I?
Yeah, just leave it up.
Does this look awesome or what? Hey, what's up? We're going into emails now, and boy, we're a little long today. Apologies. However, we did give you an amazing interview, so we can blame the interview of amazingness for this. But let's blast through emails. Flo, you got the first one.
This one just really speaks to me because I love it when somebody tells me I can veer off topic. This one comes from Paul Matthews in the UK. Paul writes in, please don't eliminate off-task conversation. After listening to part of the podcast last night, I woke my children with Macho Duck this morning on their Nest Hub, and they loved it. Mickey Mouse Funhouse is a part of their breakfast routine before school, so disco Mickey tunes were in context and tech relevant. Then that got me thinking about an area that the Twit Empire doesn't appear to cover: children's use and involvement in tech. You're all parents and frequently talk about your children's involvement with tech, good and bad, but it's rarely covered as a discussion subject in its own right. Whether AAA is a relevant channel for this or not, I'm not sure, as I don't know the listeners' profiles, but there are so many aspects of children and tech which could be relevant to a section of the audience. I have children aged from 4 to 35 and spend my entire working life in school, so I am acutely aware of parents wanting their children to develop tech skills, whilst at the same time using tech as an educational and fun tool, but being anxious about overuse and online safety. I totally agree, and I feel like organically the three of us will probably end up integrating this a little more into kind of future talks and future shows, just because that's where we're at. And by the way, I did play Disco Mickey for my husband. Because he wanted to screen it before we played it.
I'm so glad to hear that Disco Mickey went over well in the crowd. But to Paul's note, children in tech, Burke, I dropped a link in the chat. If you have access to it, for those who are watching, but I was delighted as a proud father to see my daughter taking after her old man today. We can show the video to our video viewers if you guys want to watch it or not. But as you'll see, my children are probably not of age yet to where it's actually a major topic. But I am interested in the future. There she is. So there you can all see. If you're ever curious about whether or not your kids are watching your every move, those who are watching the video can see my daughter sitting at my desk holding the mouse over the keyboard and moving it around the keyboard and banging on the keys. So, they watch us at everything we do. And I'm looking forward to someday showing her how she can be more efficient with her technology. So, that's a fun one. Cool. All right.
How do I filter these emails?
Exactly.
What was the name of that app from last week's show?
She literally sits there and just pretends she's typing. It's very funny. It's very effective, too. It's also she was reacting to an email from Carol in HR. So, OK, so moving on to our next email. Howard Harris writes in and says, I agreed with Ron's comments about Hey, the email app I showed last week. The killer for me was they have not activated aliases, so my replies cannot keep the old address, which I need for several business emails. One thing that should be explained that grabbing your username is only good if you continue past the 2-week trial, if not the name is up for grabs. Both very good points, and I agree with you. The aliases would be something I would love to see them add to it because it would make it much more flexible. If you remember, Gmail didn't always have that. I remember waiting for Gmail to add that, and that came several years after Gmail launched, so hopefully they'll get there. Howard goes on and says, also, I have my Pixel 2 on the beta. I left 3 of the slots at the bottom open for their recommendation. This morning, I asked my Nest Hub Max the lobby times for my bank. It could not help me. I opened the phone, and voila, the bank app was recommended to me in one of those slots. I've never seen it there before. Brilliant. Kudos to Google for that, and I will continue taking their recommendations for apps. And that's great to see somebody actually using the beta and the app recommendation being effective. I think that could be a game changer if it does work, and they have so many different entry points into our daily use, like via the assistant and things like that, to be able to take different contexts and filter it down to the phone could be super powerful. So thank you, Howard, for writing in.
Nice. Love it. I love that little bottom row is actually working for him. And we end, of course, with the email of the week. There we go. Yeah, it kind of sounds like a Windows 95 like
prompt. It does, and I love it. Leave it.
Okay, good. Aha. All right, that's the email of the week. This week is thank you. Thank you, Burke. Len, who writes in to say, in case you missed this article, Len says, I emailed to you a few weeks back regarding my Pixel 2 customer support experience with Google. Appreciate that, Len. My brother sent this article to me regarding the Pixel 4. This is what happened to the front screen of my phone. He's talking about an article that mentions a whole bunch of Reddit threads and Google support pages that are pointing to the glass back on the Pixel 4 XL lifting away from the chassis. It ends up resulting in a wide gap. Looks like it's probably battery expansion of some sort. He says it looks like Google may be having a battery issue in general. If this issue comes up on the show, please tell other Pixel users they can contact Google customer support and get a replacement. They don't need to pay to fix this issue. I'm glad the person at uBreak iFixit recommended to me to contact Google support, which is what Len did. Len continues by saying, looks like I may get a OnePlus 8 for my next phone. Thanks for all the talk about it on the show. I wanted to get one since the OnePlus 1, but for the longest time, they would not work on the Verizon network. And of course, now the OnePlus devices do work on the Verizon network, so you're in luck. You do have to be careful, though. I will say from my own experience, because my wife was on Verizon, and we tried to put her Verizon SIM into the OnePlus 8 that I had, and it was a universal, like, unlocked OnePlus 8, and it didn't work for certain aspects of messaging. You have to get the OnePlus 8 through Verizon. It has to be kind of cleared for Verizon, unless they've put out some sort of a fix to the international
version. That's not true. That happened to me. When I'm on the OnePlus 8, the same situation, Jason. You have to call Verizon and ask them to switch the phone to CDMA-less. So what that does
And they didn't know what I was talking about. Well, I totally did that because I saw that recommendation and they were like, I don't know what you're talking about. No, we can't do that. And so,
I did it through online chat, actually. The online chat person helped me, got it all done. As long as you have your account password, they can do it. So
good context.
Yeah,
Thank you, Flo.
I had the same problem and I reached out on Twitter and a bunch of folks responded. And so from there, I kind of like, okay, this is what I should do. And it fixed it. But
Yeah.
It's one annoying thing about using Verizon is the whole CDMA thing, you know.
Totally.
You get service everywhere, but
yeah. Okay, well, that's really important information. So thank you for clarifying, because I'm sure some other people have run into that. It stumped me. After I called and they wouldn't do it, I was like, oh, well, I guess you have to buy their version of it. That must be the solution. So anywho, Len, I hope that's helpful. And thank you for sharing. And for anyone who has a Pixel 4 XL, mine is not lifting away. The display is fine. There's nothing happening with the battery that I know of in my device yet. But hey, you never know. We've got some time. It could happen. We'll see. But thank you, Len, and congratulations for the email of the week. Okay.
Da, da,
da. There we go.
Thank you.
That feels complete now. We are at the end of this episode of All About Android. Again, a big thanks to Google and to Dave Burke for spending time with us tonight. We love it when folks from Google can join us and talk about what it's like creating this operating system that we love so much that we record a show about it each and every week called All About Android. So thanks to Google for that awesome interview. Flo, what's new in your world?
What is new in my world? I got this new hair barrette. It's Smiley's.
That's nice.
But besides that, I'm just working hard over here. If you want to keep up with me, go to florenceion.com. It's the Flow feed. That's where I update what I've been working on, what I've published. If you have questions for me, send them to Ask Flow. Kind of the next one I'm thinking of working on is wearables, because I've been getting a lot of questions about watches and fitness watches. So stay tuned to florenceion.com. And there you can also find out where to follow me on social media. I'm all over Twitter, Instagram. I'm even still on Snapchat. The only one I haven't completely gone to is TikTok. And that's because, quite frankly, it intimidates me a bit. So there I am. That's right.
Also, it's a undercover agent for a foreign government, so maybe you're better off.
But the likes and the views.
Can you really turn your back to the views and the likes?
Maybe. A true influencer.
Listen, I'm aging here. I'll take any views and likes that I can get, okay? I'm starting to really have an identity crisis. Anyway.
Oh, please. Flo, thank you so much for doing the show each and every week with us. The show would not be the same without you.
It wouldn't.
Thank you, guys.
What about you, Ron?
So I'm working on my usual nonsense. You can go follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RonXO. But I have a little tease for an upcoming show. Just earlier today, I opened up this little sucker, which is the LG Velvet. And not only is it super thin and super long and super light, but all three of us are going to get to give this a test drive. So we're going to have what possibly might be the first time a true AAA All About Android group review, which I'm very excited about.
What's the name we came up with?
I was actually thinking as I was out before we recorded the show, I was out picking up my dinner, and I was thinking, I'm like, man, it'd be really cool. Like, I'm going to write you guys. We're going to organize this review. I want to come up with some more, categories and have us all weigh in on it, and then ultimately come up with our first All About Android rating, which I think would be interesting. So I did not prepare anyone for that. I'm completely winging it, but that's how I go.
That's a new era, Ron. That's
how it is. Ooh. This is the new show. You never know what's going to happen. We're just going to introduce rating systems. So there you go.
It's about time. We review fun on this show. We should have ratings.
Yeah, so stay tuned for the LG Velvet. Going to get the full All About Android triple review treatment. So there you go.
Hey, Ron, can I tell you a really quick joke before we move on? Somebody told me today in my Discord that I should take the LG Velvet into the subway so it could be the Velvet Underground. They said you would probably really like that joke, so that's why I wanted to tell it.
I really did like that joke, and I want to know who brought the comedian to your Discord.
It's Brad the Marsh, I believe, is his username. He's usually in the chat, but he's not today. So
how many members of your Discord are there?
I have about 100.
Nice. That's formidable. Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Ron is both a music fan and a dad, so that joke worked on multiple levels.
I mean, it really did. It hit. Anytime you can make a corny joke about anything related to Lou Reed, I'm all on board for. So.
Big thanks to Burke at the studio for setting everything up and pushing the buttons, especially today. Appreciate you. Also appreciate Victor working behind the scenes. Still definitely very connected to the show. He's the one that edits the show and also watches while we do this show for good moments and stuff like that for social and everything. So thank you, Victor, for doing that. As for me, you can find me doing other shows on the network. Tech News Weekly, of course, with Micah Sargent every Thursday. Hands on Android also on Thursdays. This week's episode that's coming out is going to be all about root backup. So it's an app that you've heard of a million times by now if you're in the root world, Titanium Backup. It's still around. It still looks exactly like it did when it launched like 10 years ago or whatever, but it's still very powerful. And so I thought I'd kind of show off what you can do if you have root and you want to back up the apps on your device. So that's twit.tv/HOA. Real quick before we end, twit.tv/store. Go there now and you will see that there are new All About Android shirts with the new logo design. I have to say, like, the way that it layers onto all the different colored shirt options is just really cool. It plays off the background really nicely. And
there's pastels for those of us who love the pastel, femme aesthetic. You can get it if you go into the women's shirts. You got like cool pinks and purples.
Very cool.
Look at that. Love it. It's just it's a great design. Thank you to Anthony Nielsen for all of his work on that. And to Jerry Wagley for getting it up in the store. But you can go get your shirts now, twit.tv/store, or your masks. I think you can get that on a mask design as well.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of, don't forget to wear a mask. It saves lives. Respect yourself and the others around you. Wear a mask. That's it for this week. Twit.tv/AAA is where you can go to subscribe to this show. So please do that. We publish this show every Tuesday evening, thanks to Victor's hard work. Go there and subscribe, and you won't miss a single episode. Twit.tv/AAA. That's it for this week. We'll see y'all next week on another episode of All About Android. Bye, everybody.
Nice. Yay, t-shirts.
Want more Twit? Check out Tech News Weekly, twit.tv/TNW. Tech News Weekly is a show where Jason Howell and I bring the latest and greatest interviews to you from the people making and breaking the tech news. twit.tv/TNW.